who sat safely on Archer's strong shoulders and excitedly waved at me. I could see Archer look up and give her an order, and immediately she lowered her hands and grabbed onto his dark hair. "Yes, both Raven and Kaya are very pretty," my mother agreed.
"You're pretty too,"
Finn said with a charming smile that flustered my mother a bit. With her 57 years, she kept in good shape, but I knew Finn was just being playful with her because it was his nature. She would be safe with him, and I was glad Khan had chosen Finn to guard my mother during the ceremony. "Hey, don't flirt with my mom," I warned him, and no tickling her either. He held up both hands with a look of innocence.
"I won't touch your mother, Pearl, I swear it."
But he couldn't help a cheeky grin in Isabel's direction.
"Unless, of course, you want to be touched."
Did my mother just blush pink?
"Finn, my friend."
A deep voice made us all turn to see a man I hadn't met before.
"I would love an introduction."
He gave my mother a large smile, but Finn stepped in front of her.
"Piss off, Nelson. I simply wanted to..."
But the man didn't get a chance to finish his sentence before Finn cut him off.
"If I thought Isabel wanted to listen to an asshole, I'd fart."
Lowering his brows and squaring his shoulders, Finn sent out a clear warning to the man.
"I said piss off."
Nelson shot Finn a dirty look before he turned and left.
"Sorry, ladies, but that man isn't worthy of your company," Finn declared. "He broke Boulder's arm when they fought for Christina. A real asshat, if you ask me."
In that moment, I was picked up from behind by Khan.
"Here's my beauty,"
he said lovingly, and kissed me before smiling at my mom.
"Don't believe a word he says."
Khan threw a nod in Finn's direction.
"So you're not an amazing ruler and the best chess player in the world?"
Isabel asked with a polite smile. Khan's eyes flew to Finn.
"You told her that?"
Finn nodded.
"Well, in that case,"
Khan grinned.
"Listen to my wise friend Finn, he knows what he's talking about."
It warmed my heart when my mother chuckled. This had to be difficult for her, but she was exceeding my highest hopes of her giving the N-Man a chance.
"You sure you don't want me to introduce you to a handsome man while you're here?"
Khan teased my mother, who took the bait.
"I've already been given a flower,"
she said and lifted it again. Khan turned his head to Finn.
"From you?" "I'm afraid not."
Finn shrugged with mock disappointment.
"You said I couldn't come on to Isabel. Otherwise, I'd been pulling out my romance repertoire." "Your romance repertoire,"
Khan grinned. "That sounds interesting," my mother said with laughter in her voice.
"But I'm way too old for you anyway."
"Don't break my heart, Isabel,"
Finn said and lifted her hand to kiss it.
"A young man can only hope."
"Finn," I pushed at him lightly. "Quit while you're ahead, will you?" He dropped his head in defeat and winked at me. "Mom, are you going to be okay for a few minutes? I just want to mingle a little."
"I'm fine, darling,"
my mother said and shot me a genuine smile.
"I see Khan's mother, Erica. I'll go talk to her."
Moving on with Khan's hand in mine, we mingled, and later, the party continued with the closest of our friends inside the Grey Manor. Raven had a blast, and when the men put on music and started jumping up and down in what appeared to be their version of dancing, she joined them, with her hair bobbing around her head and her face split in a large grin. She looked like the happiest 11-year-old girl in the world when Archer, Magni, Boulder, and Khan all danced with her at the same time. "Awful music, isn't it?" Christina commented, but smiled at the sight of the man and the first little girl they had been allowed to hang out with. "Yes, the tones are very hard. Boulder calls it rock." I blinked because the bass was so dominant, but the men flailed their arms in the air and were bumping into each other in fits of laughter. "They look as free as children," Kaya said, smiling with us.
"Come join us,"
Boulder called. And before we knew it, the men had dragged us over and were jumping around us. We were laughing and unsure how to dance their way at first, but it didn't look too complicated.
"I think the trick is to look as ridiculous as possible,"
Kaya shouted over the music and lifted her arms, imitating Boulder. Dancing like no one was watching turned out to be the most fun I'd had in years.
and it didn't take me long to let go of all my inhibitions. No points could be given for style, but we were sweaty, my lips hurt from smiling, and my belly was sore from laughing. Even Magni seemed carefree for a change, and it hit me how different he looked when he was laughing. I'd never seen Magni laugh, but he had dimples and his blue eyes were gorgeous when he wasn't scowling at me. When he went to get something to drink and cool down on the balcony, I saw my chance to approach him about what was on my mind. "Magni," I said and waited for him to look back.
"Oh, hey."
He nodded at me and I walked out on the balcony to join him.
"Congratulations,"
he said, and lifted his glass to me.
"Sister-in-law?"
I was expecting to see sarcasm in his eyes, but there was none.
"Sorry about the jackass Johnny thing,"
he said.
"Boulder and I just had to be sure where your loyalty was."
"Khan told you?" I asked.
"Uh-huh."
Magni took a sip of his beer.
"He never doubted you, of course."
He looked back into the gala room.
"He's so fucking proud of you, Pearl."
"Magni, there's something I think you should know."
"What?"
"Before I came back here, I spoke to Laura." Magni coughed in his beer and his eyes grew big.
"And?"
he said eagerly.
"How is she? What did she say?"
"She's fine," I hurried to say. "I told her how much you miss her." He frowned and I wasn't sure he had wanted me to tell her that. I continued. "And the first thing she asked me was how you were."
"And what did you tell her?"
he asked, tension in his shoulders. "I told her you're as strong and healthy as ever."
"Good."
He nodded with relief.
"You didn't tell her about the other stuff, did you?"
I assumed he meant the jokes about him and his months of drinking himself into oblivion. "No, I didn't tell her any of that."
"Did she say when she's coming back?"
he asked with hope in his voice. "I asked her to come back with me, but she's not ready yet."
"Yet? So she is coming back?"
"She wouldn't say. But I asked her to record a message for you. Do you want to see it?" He swallowed hard and nodded. I stepped to a darker corner of the balcony where no one would see us from within and activated my wristband. Magni stayed close and drew in his breath when Laura's hologram appeared above my wrist. Her hair was a beautiful copper red, and her eyes were expressive with long lashes. "Hey, Magni," she said and bit her lip. "I hope you're doing well and that my absence isn't causing you concern. I'm safe, and training in martial arts as I came for." She paused, looking unsure what else to say. "Pearl said that she and I will be sisters since she's marrying Khan. It made me happy to hear it, but I can't go back with her. It's not that my life with you is bad, but the freedom I have here, well, I'm not ready to give it up. I can't go back to how things were." She shook her head with a sad expression. "Still, I miss you sometimes. You and all my friends and family." Laura licked her lips and looked down. "I'm not sure what else to say." Her beautiful blue eyes looked up and my gaze fell on Magni, who was staring at her, his chest rising up and down, and his eyes burning with longing. "Take care, Magni, and if we meet again, don't be angry with me. I never meant to hurt you." The recording ended, and the balcony fell back into darkness.
"Can I send her a reply?"
he asked eagerly. "Yes."
"Then record this,"
he said and waited for me to angle my wristband at him.
"Laura, I just saw your message and I'm happy you're safe,"
he started out.
"I'm going to make you this offer only once, so you better take it. If you come home now, I will teach you to fight. If you really want to learn martial arts, I'll fucking teach you. Just come home, okay?"
He paused and drew in a heavy breath before he added,
"I miss you."
With his eyes, Magni signaled to me to stop the recording. "Why didn't you tell her that you wouldn't punish her?" I asked.
"Because Laura would know I was lying,"
he said matter-of-factly. Now wasn't the time to argue with him. "I'll make sure Laura gets the message," I said and turned to return to the others when Magni stopped me with his hand on my arm.
"Can I have her message?"
I gave a nod and transferred the recording to his wristband. "Got it?"
"Yes."
I was almost by the door when he called my name.
"Pearl."
I turned and met his eyes.
Thank you,
he said softly. My pleasure, I smiled.
Chapter 31 Meditation Khan. When I sat cross-legged on Sunday noon, with my eyes closed and calming music surrounding me, with a woman's soft voice guiding me into a state of relaxation and meditation, I did make a mental note never to agree to anything just because I was post-orgasmic. Our wedding night had been everything I had hoped for, and more. Pearl was open to experimenting, and with about 20 years of theoretical experience gathered from watching old porn, I had enough ideas to last us a lifetime. No wonder I'd been susceptible to complying when she asked me to try meditation. I had been on my back, panting and sweating after an athletic performance in the art of satisfying my woman and myself. Pearl was a sly panther, and had purred in my ear about how much she wanted me to try meditation. Just sitting and relaxing for 20 minutes hadn't sounded too bad at the time, so I'd agreed. Anything for my kitten.
Take a deep breath and feel your limbs relax, the soft female voice said, and I followed instructions.
Annoyance and a list of 10 practical matters that I could be doing instead of sitting here flared up, and I opened my eyes. I tried, I concluded, and untangled my legs to get up from the floor.
What are you doing?
Pearl asked from the sofa and lowered the book she was holding. I thought you'd left, I said.
No, I knew you wouldn't give it a real chance, so I stayed to make sure you did.
Look, I tried, but it's not working, and honestly, I would rather play chess.
Why do you love chess so much?
She asked. Who knows, I just do, I said. Pearl, honey, meditation might work for you, but it won't work for me. I've got too much on my mind. On bare feet, and wearing only shorts and a tank top, Pearl came to sit in front of me, signaling for me to get back in position.
That's exactly why you, of all people, need to meditate. It's a way of creating clarity in your mind.
How? I asked dryly.
Imagine your mind is like a pond, and right now there's a storm of thoughts making the water dark, muddy, and impossible to navigate through.
I'm not a fish. I don't have to navigate through water, I said impatiently. Pearl just smiled patiently.
You need to quiet down the storm of thoughts.
She used her hand to show something dropping slowly through the air.
The pond will become clear again when all the mud falls to the bottom, and not only will you be able to see things you didn't know were there, but the surface of the pond will serve as a mirror, showing you true reflections of yourself and the people in your life.
I drew in a deep sigh. Okay, I'll try again. But I don't think I can empty my head of thoughts. It's too crowded in there. I placed a finger on my temple.
It takes practice, but if you get distracted, you just center yourself, almost as if you're sitting on a bench watching people pass. You don't have to get up and follow them. Think of the thoughts as people, and let them pass.
Okay. I hesitated.
What is it?
It's just that there are a lot of unpleasant memories from my past, and I'm wondering if the muddy water isn't better than seeing that shit clearly again.
You think about your past?
Yeah. Maybe it was the aftermath of our wedding night, or the bond I felt with her for becoming my wife, but I opened up. I bring back the worst memories when I'm under pressure. They help me stay cold and ruthless. Pearl's eyes expanded, and her chest rose in a deep intake of air.
Be careful about what memories you allow to occupy your thoughts. Did you know that your brain works like a database? It's constantly trying to figure out what interests you and show you more of that. If you focus on the negative, it will show you more negatives, and the more you focus on a specific memory, the more your brain will play it for you. In time, it'll archive memories you don't think about. They'll be forgotten, as if they never happened.
No, I didn't know that. She crossed her legs. Try to focus on the good memories and push the negatives to the background. I scrunched up my face. Christ, she made it sound so easy, but she probably had no idea what it was like to live with memories like mine. Come on, I'll meditate with you, Pearl said, placing her hands in her lap and closing her eyes. I started the meditation guide again, and this time I let my thoughts come and go, remembering her words that it was okay to just let the thoughts pass without taking any action. The music was relaxing, and when a small bell rang after 20 minutes, I felt my heart rate beat slow and steady, as if I had no cares in the world. Opening my eyes, I watched my wife sitting across from me like a statue crafted to honor female perfection. She looked completely at peace. My first movement made her open an eye. "How was it?" she asked. "Good," I said, and leaned forward to kiss her. "I'm very relaxed now."
"That's wonderful. We'll do it again tonight."
I didn't object because she had joined my world by moving here, and I wanted to share some of hers by learning her traditions. Plus, I actually did feel better.
"I'm just going to take a quick shower before I'm meeting with my mother," she said when I pulled her up from the floor. "We're going to the school to help prepare for the girls' arrival tomorrow. Will you come?"
"Finn will take you, but I'll follow in a few hours. I just have some work I need to look at." 2 hours later, I sat in my office. The house was quiet, and my feelings from the peaceful meditation came back to me. My eyes fell to the chessboard, and Pearl's question from earlier about why I loved chess so much made me think. A memory pressed on my inner walls, but it had a different feel to it, as if it didn't really belong. I closed my eyes and let the memory take me back 24 years. As I sat crouched over a chess game, my head rested in my hands, and my mind was analyzing my options. "Not bad for a 10-year-old," my father said when I finally made my move. "I didn't think you'd see that opening. I'm impressed." He moved his knight just like I'd hoped he would, and I was just about to make my move when my concentration was broken by my father's friend, Mr. Zobel, who came in to remind my father of an appointment. Disappointment filled me that we couldn't finish our game. "Give me a minute, I'm getting my ass whipped by my son," my father said. "Stay and watch if you want." Surprise and immense pride rippled through me from his words, and because he prioritized finishing our game. And then, a few minutes later, I said the words that would later become addictive in my life. "Checkmate." My father's deep, rumbling laughter filled my heart, and I grinned widely when he used his large palm to ruffle up my hair. "Good job, my boy. That's what I like to see. You've got brains." And then he called Magni over, pointing to the chessboard. "Magni, did you see that? Your brother might be a fucking genius." I leaned back in my seat, no longer a 10-year-old boy, but a grown man blinking while repeating that last sentence again and again. A fucking genius. My father had called me a genius. Another memory flashed, and I gasped as it hit me square in my chest. How could I have forgotten? "What do you think I should do?" my father asked after carefully explaining the conundrum to me, his 15-year-old heir. "We have people living in the streets, and I want to help, but if I raise the taxes, my people are going to be angry and possibly storm the manor to start a rebellion. If I don't raise the taxes, we'll have to choose between helping the poor or paying the soldiers to protect us, and as you know, without soldiers, we'll be vulnerable in case the people attack us anyway." I thought about it. "Isn't there a third option?" He swung his hands. "If so, I'd like to hear it." "How about we make the people contribute voluntarily?" I said. My father angled his head with a small smile. "And how would you do that?" "We could give them something in return for their money. How about we invite the best entertainers to join a summer festival here at the manor, and then we charge an entrance fee. My father laughed. I'm a ruler, not a businessman. No one would need to know you're doing it for money, and you wouldn't have to be involved directly yourself. Sell it to the people as a promotion of our finest performers and athletes. We have the amphitheater, so why not use it? We could fill it every week over the summer with entertainment of different kinds. Sport, music, acrobats, and magic shows. I think people would love it. My father leaned back and gave me a lopsided grin. That's fucking brilliant. What's that friend of yours called? Boxer? You mean Boulder? Yeah, I'm told he has a head for numbers. Uh-huh. You two work on the plans and give me an estimate of how much we can bring in. I'm on it. I got up, eager that my father trusted me with something this important. And Khan, he called after me. I fucking like how you think. I was shocked, mostly because for years I'd convinced myself that my father was a monster. But now, flashes of his encouraging me and praising me came back to me. The man had been unpredictable and probably under a lot of pressure at times, but that wasn't the whole story. If you want to focus on what's wrong, you also have to acknowledge what's right. Pearl's words from the other night came back to me, and I rubbed my face. My father had been a gigantic asshole, but there had still been good times, too. Why had I forgotten that? Why had I obsessed about the bad stuff and completely suppressed the good stuff? And then the answer to Pearl's question lit up in my brain. I loved chess because it had connected me to my father. A wide smile spread on my lips as a new peace settled inside me. Gathering my things, I rose up from my chair, suddenly missing Pearl like crazy and eager to join her and the others on Boulder's Island.
Chapter 32. Welcome and goodbye. Pearl. I'm so glad you stayed for the girls' arrival. I told my mom and hooked an arm under hers. Isabel had worked as hard as anyone these last 2 days to get everything ready for the students' arrival. I wouldn't miss it for the world, she said and gave me a genuine smile. Will you come and visit us? I asked her. Or have the men scarred you for life? She squeezed my arm. I'll come back. And I think I owe you an apology. Oh? I should have listened to you. It's just very hard to imagine until you experience it yourself. You're right. I leaned my head against hers with a knot in my chest. And there's still a lot that I'll never learn to understand or appreciate.
Like their music, my mother suggested with a telling smile.
Yes, and their hunting, swearing, and violent tournaments. She nodded solemnly.
Do you think you can change them?
Yes, I said softly. I think we are changing them, just like they're changing us.
But those barbaric ways, how do we get them to give them up?
I gave her an innocent smile. Remember when I spoke in the council and I suggested allowing a group of selected N-men to visit the motherlands and break down prejudices?
Yes, I remember.
I think that's what it takes. They have this warped view of us and think we operate without free will like an ant farm or brainwashed chickens or something. We need some of them to come and learn to see the beauty in our way of doing things. My mother looked worried. Don't you think the idea of N-men in the motherlands is less scary now that you've met some of them? You liked Finn, right? My mother nodded.
Oh, Finn's a charmer, for sure. And very funny in a crude sort of way.
See, if we let him and a handful of other guys experience the motherlands, that would help break down boundaries. Maybe let Finn do an interview in the media and let Motlanders ask him questions.
I like that idea.
My mother swung her head toward the school building.
If this becomes a success, we could send a film crew to follow the work you do here and inform Motlanders about the project.
Give us 6 months, I said, feeling hopeful that by then we would have integrated the children into one strong group. Boulder's drone landed and we craned our heads curiously to see who Boulder was bringing this time. Christina got out and reached her hand up to help one girl at a time jump down on the ground. I recognized them from their files. Five girls between 10 and 15 stood nervously close to Christina and looked around. As agreed, Archer, Magni, and Marco, the new assistant, were to keep in the background while Kaya, my mother, and I were the girls' official welcome committee. "Let's go say hello," I said, and let go of my mother to greet the girls. "Welcome, may peace surround you." I went directly for the tallest girl in the group because I was curious about Shelley Summers, a girl of 15 who was apparently a genius. "May peace surround you," she said politely and looked from me to my mother. "You're Councilwoman Pearl and Chairwoman Isabel." "That's right, and you're Shelley Summers," I said softly. "My mother has spoken highly of you both." "Thank you. We hold much respect for your mother as well." "This is my sister, Rochelle." Shelley nudged her sister forward and Rochelle shyly greeted us. The two girls didn't look alike. Neither of them were very pretty, but Rochelle had clear baby skin, while Shelley suffered from a bad case of acne and some seriously bushy eyebrows. My conclusion was that Shelley wasn't vain or focused on her looks, because eyebrows could be trimmed, and acne was easily treated if you were willing to dedicate the time. This girl, it seemed, would rather study, and I could relate. We greeted the other three girls. Mila was an adorable blonde 10-year-old with big dimples and sparkling blue eyes. She was a little reserved, but I had no doubt she would steal the hearts of all of us quickly. Paisy was Mila's opposite in looks, with her brown eyes and dark hair, but the two of them had already bonded on the journey here and were holding hands. And then there was Willow, the girl who would meet her twin tomorrow and didn't know it yet. She was stunning, with large green eyes and wavy hair that reached the small of her back. Being only 12, she was tall for her age and already developing female curves. Christina and Boulder left for the second group of Motlanders right away, since they had arrived earlier than expected. We were still getting to know the first group when the last five children arrived. Victoria, Nikki, and Skye were accompanied by the two boys, Tommy and Niall, who would make the group complete. With the weather being warm and nice, Kaya had them all sit in a circle on the grass playing games to memorize each other's names. "Before we go in and show you your new school, we would like to introduce you to some of your teachers. As I told you, I'm Kaya Janae, and I'll be focusing on the emotional and academic part of your curriculum. You will also be working with Shelley some of the time, since Shelley is my new assistant." Shelley waved at the eight girls and two boys. "And then we have Christina and Pearl, who will help out from time to time." The children smiled politely. "But, as you know, you're now in the Northlands, and that means you're going to be learning with boys from the Northlands, and you're going to have teachers who are real Enmen." The children exchanged glances. A few looked completely undisturbed, while others bit their lips and fidgeted with their hands. "Since Raven has been here for a few days already, I thought we could let her introduce your male teachers," Kaya said and pointed to Raven, who jumped up and waved her hand eagerly toward the school. Archer was the first to come out, large, broad-shouldered, stubble on his face, and his hair tied back. Raven waited for him to come to her before she took his hand and looked up at the giant.
"This is Archer. He can read upside down and stuff 7 crackers in his mouth at the same time," she said.
Archer smiled at the group.
"I'm very happy to meet you all. Raven has taught me a lot about girls and boys from the Motherlands already. I'm ready to see if it's true you only skip and never walk."
The girls giggled, and Mila shook her head, her dimples popping out.
"I never skip, but I'm a fast runner."
"Me too,"
Niall added and grinned. Archer narrowed his eyes.
"Okay, but surely it's true that you all sleep with socks on your hands."
"No!"
The children were laughing and shaking their heads while Marco came out to stand next to Archer. The young man looked nervous and kept pushing his hair back and shifting his balance. When I first met him this morning, Marco had admitted to me that he'd never met a female in his life, so it was no wonder the young man was overwhelmed with this new mystery in front of him.
"This is Marco," Raven said. "I only just met him this morning, but he seems nice enough."
Marco waved and some of the girls said,
"May peace surround you, Marco."
But then all eyes flickered to Magni and Con, who came out side by side. The children went completely silent,
and my belly flared up with appreciation of what a fine specimen of the human race my new husband was. Khan was regal, and carried himself with confidence. The brothers didn't come out smiling or making jokes. Khan and Magni stood side by side, dark next to blonde, fierce and scary to behold.
"This is Magni, who will be our teacher too," Raven said and pointed up at Magni. "He's scarier than the others, and he promised that he'll teach us to be scary too."
Magni frowned.
"We're going to learn how to fight like Northmen," Raven declared.
Magni gave Raven a nod toward Khan, who stood firmly next to him.
"Oh, and this is Lord Khan," Raven said to the children. "I don't know him that well yet, but he's Magni's older brother. He lives in a castle, and all the men listen when he speaks, and,"
she added with a cheeky grin,
"he looks really funny when he dances."
Raven made the other kids laugh with her imitation of how the men had danced at the wedding, her arms dangling around in the air while she jumped in an uncoordinated way and made funny faces. Christina, Boulder, my mother, and the rest of us adults erupted in laughter, too. Even Magni and Khan couldn't hide a smile.
Khan. I stayed back while Finn and Pearl took Isabel to the border. Finn was phenomenal at charming the councilwoman and making her laugh. I still found it hard to forget that Isabel had tried to come between me and Pearl, so my natural charm didn't flow as freely around her, yet. The two boys and eight girls were busy finding their new beds and getting to know each other. Boulder, Magni, and I stood in the background, watching as Kaya and Archer played a game with them. "Kaya says it's important for them to socialize and bond," Magni said in a low rumble. "Yeah," Boulder nodded. "I could stand here all day just looking at that glorious sight. Girls, real girls here in the Northlands. Who would have thought?" His gray eyes were burning with excitement. "It'll be interesting to see how the boys react tomorrow," I said, my eyes following the children playing tag with Marco and Archer having to catch them. When one of the girls fell with a scream, we all leaned forward, ready to run to her, but Archer was there and helped her back up. The girl cried a little, but quickly dried her eyes and nodded that she was okay. We collectively relaxed again. "When are they going to tell Willow and Hunter that they are twins?" I asked, and heard the sweet sound of a drone returning. I looked up, smiling that my wife was back. "Not sure," Magni said. "I'm leaving all that emotional stuff to Kaya. She says it has to be done the right way, but I have no fucking clue what that means." "I'm just happy that we pulled it off," Boulder said, still following the interaction in front of him. "Not long ago this island was quiet, and now it's full of life." "Maybe you're going to long for some quiet once the boys arrive," Magni noted, but I didn't hear more because the drone was landing, and I ran to open the door. "Hey, handsome," Pearl said, and let me help her down. "Hey, beautiful," I replied lovingly. "Did you send her off well?" "Yes," Pearl said, and smiled. "And Finn had my mom cracking up with all his bad jokes that he suggested she share with the council." "So are you happy with her visit?" I waved to Finn, who moved to Boulder and Magni by the school, while Pearl and I stayed close together by the drone. "Yes, I'm very happy, and I'm grateful that my mom got to be here to see the children arrive. She cares about this school, and now that I live here and she's met you all, I think we can count her as one of our strongest allies." "I'm starting to think it was a good thing that my brother kidnapped Athena. If not for him, this school wouldn't exist," I said. "And?" she said, drawn out with an expectant look. "And what?" I teased. "And we wouldn't be together," she said. "Oh yeah, that too," I grinned and squeezed her butt. "That should have been top of your list," she mock-scolded me. "Above meditation? Because I'm pretty sure I would have never meditated either if not for you." She knew I was riling her up, but Pearl went with the friendly banter. "Our love should be the most important thing. Because of the sex?
No, because of the bond we share.
What bond? I asked with a straight face that was hard to pull off with her starting to get annoyed with me for real.
The bond between us. You know, the love, respect, and everything else that we share.
Like our love for chess?
Yes, among other things, but mostly the trust and loyalty.
Yeah, I agree. Chess, loyalty, and sex should be top of our list, always. Pearl gave up. Hey, did you just roll your eyes at me? I asked and laughed. What happened to your politeness and acting with poise and grace?
I married you and it all went out the window, Pearl said with a sigh.
What window? This window? I pointed to the drone.
Oh, stop it, will you? You're getting on my nerves.
And there she was, the lioness who had stopped fighting men from killing each other in a bar and convinced a greedy man to share his fortune. The woman who had unselfishly offered herself to save Athena and who tirelessly stood up for justice on both sides of the border. This woman was my match and so much more.
Aren't you glad you married such an incredible, intelligent, handsome man? I asked, feeding on the energy between us.
Yes, she answered sardonically, and I especially value how modest you are.
I know you could learn a little from me on that front. It's annoying when you constantly brag, you know.
I'll try to limit my boasting and bragging, Pearl said, and poked a finger between my ribs.
And your fits of violence, I said, and held on to her finger. You almost cut me open with those sharp nails.
Oh, yeah?
Pearl angled her head, and humor played in her beautiful blue eyes.
Good thing you didn't actually have to fight me, if a fingernail is all it takes to hurt you.
I narrowed my eyes. Just for the record, my darling, I said, and leaned close enough to brush her lips and speak in a low, seductive tone. If I had fought for you, I would have won. No man would be strong enough to stand between you and me. Pearl's eyes grew bigger, and she wet her lips. I would be fueled by the most potent power in the universe, and I would pity any man who stepped into the arena against me.
What power is that?
She whispered, her pupils dilated and her breathing ragged.
Love, Pearl, I whispered. I would be fueled by an insane amount of desire and love for you.
With her hands on my shoulders and my hands cupping her face, we met in a hungry kiss, completely forgetting time and place, until someone whistled shrilly and shouted at us,
"There are children present!"
We pulled apart, panting from the intensity, and seeing the children point and laugh.
"You think we traumatized them?" I asked Pearl.
"Nah, I think we showed them that men and women can be very fond of each other. Let's hope they remember that when they meet the boys tomorrow."
I chuckled. "You want them to imitate what we just did?"
"No, of course not."
"I do. In a few years, I mean."
"You're hoping they fall in love?"
"Of course," I said honestly, and not just because I want more women in the Northlands, but most of all, because I want my fellow Enmen to experience what we have.
"And what is that?"
"Everything, Pearl. We have everything."
"What does that mean?"
"Stop thinking with your head." I planted my hand on her heart. "Feel with your heart and ask yourself what we have." She smiled at me, her blue eyes soft around the edges.
"So many words are popping up," she said. "Connection, trust, love, attraction, respect, desire. I could keep going."
I smiled back at her, my eyes looking deeply into hers. "That's because we have everything." She rose up on her toes to meet my kiss before she grinned and said,
"Tomorrow, when the boys arrive, we might have more than we can handle."
"I'm not worried," I said.
"That's because you have me to worry for you."
"Do you need a distraction?" I nodded to the woods, remembering how good it had been to have sex there a few weeks ago. I take my wedding vows very seriously, and I am happy to fill you, remember? Pearl looked radiant as she stood in the sunlight, with her long blonde hair cascading down her shoulders, and her large grin that made her eyes sparkle. "And there it is," she said, with humor dancing in her eyes.
"What?"
"Remember that time when I called you a pervert, just before you masturbated?"
I tilted my head. "What about it?"
"I was right." She wrapped her arms around my neck, still grinning. "Now we have proof. You truly are a pervert."
"No, I'm not."
"You're asking me to have sex while there are children around."
"I wasn't going to take you in front of the kids," I objected. "We'll be quiet and hide in the woods."
Pearl leaned in and whispered in my ear, "I'm tempted to go with you."
That made me grin wider. "That just proves that I was right all along. Your mind is just as dirty as mine."
"No, because being tempted and actually doing it are two different things."
"Can't you just agree with me for once?" I joked. She shook her head and nuzzled her nose against mine.
"No, you would miss our great discussions, and so would I."
"True."
"Aha!"
Pearl pulled back and raised her brows.
"So we actually do agree on something."
"There's that, and at least one other thing we can agree on."
"And what is that?"
"That we love each other," I said. Her fingers were playing with my hair, and her expression was soft when she nodded her head.
"You're right. We can absolutely agree on that."
This concludes The Ruler by Elin Peer, narrated by Noel Bridges and John Masterson. Copyright 2017 by Elin Peer. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Mian Publishing, LLC, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.